Do you think about making dynasty trades even while watching football games?
Are you thinking of player values when you should be thinking of family values? Then you may have a trading problem.
Don't worry, you're not alone. I am Dynasty Outhouse and I have a trading problem.
And I'm Brian Haar and I also have a trading problem.
Join us for the Trade Addicts podcast where you can be with like-minded people and talk about everything in the NFL in the context of dynasty trade values.
News and notes, make amends, keep trade buys, all these things we will cover every week.
And don't forget Trade Addicts trades.
So when you're done listening to this fine DLF family podcast, please tune in to the Trade Addicts podcast.
Thank you and enjoy your podcast.
Do you have the time to listen to me grind? Take down the film watchers and nerds all at once. With the math's not adding up, you bet I'm checking it out. I'm just piling, working to the ground.
But here we are. It's a crossroads vibe this week. For me, at least. We're going to try and put out an early episode of The Crossroads, maybe a second episode of The Crossroads this week. A lot's changed. I was typing in the information to start this episode, and for one, that's changed. Like, I have to do a setup before I start. I have to make sure I'm wearing, you know, not something too raggedy, and my hair doesn't look too wild. I had three different things going up, and I know I don't look like I'm on the secret bridge of a futuristic starship like most streamers, and I don't have accent lights, and I don't, I'm not pretending I live in a mansion or something, but I think we've come a long way. My camera's better, my setup's a little better, hopefully my audio's a little better. After a record, there's definitely post show work that has to be done. I do a lot more prep work in that I spend a lot more time talking about the flow of the show and what's going to be on it. Not necessarily this episode, it's kind of spare in the moment, but a lot's changed. I still, however, 176, well, I still look up and wonder where Jake is sometimes. Like, he left and I just kind of kept my nose down, my head to the grindstone. I don't know, it works some sort of way. One of those things works. This many episodes later, it's got to be like 100 episodes later, and it still feels like he just left. Like, The Crossroads, like I said, it's meant to be more of a conversational, just having fun talking about football from different perspectives, and I've been doing a lot of both sides of the conversation by myself for a while, which fits my nature. I like to disagree with myself to test my own hypothesis or ideas, but I mean, it can get self-defeating at a certain point when you're the one objecting to what you're thinking. You can then just end up in sort of a spiral. So I've tried to invite guests on pretty often. We've been having fun. Kind of a lonely place, but we found someone else. We found our audience. We found the Patreon Discord, which is constantly giving me good ideas. Twitter's continually offering me good feedback. I do miss talking to Jake on a regular basis. In fact, I imagine if I haven't picked up one new listener in the last 100 episodes, then I'm probably sure ought to quit. So there's probably a few of you out of the seven that listen that don't remember Jake being on the podcast, and that's just wild to me. When we're talking about this, again, because this is more a conversational setting, and this is just I just want to chat a little bit about football broadly and deeply, and that's why this is a Crossroads episode. Why? Because some of the issues coming up lately are more interesting conversational pieces. They're not hard-hitting, they're not even new. Like, J.K. Dobbins, Cam Akers, and Travis Etienne have all gone down this year. Running back injuries be a problem. But it's interesting, we're suffering, frankly, a lot of running back injuries to sophomore and rookie running backs, which are usually the high hit rate category. And I think it's going under-mentioned that while we do suffer running back injuries, like, these are normally the players that we're most excited about, and we were this year. And what does that mean for 2021? Instead, we're getting stuck on a conversation about running back handcuffs and running people off of Twitter in one instance, because we're so ferociously in favor of the game theory that, and if you don't know it, like, I can do a brief version of it, but that probably means you haven't listened to the Late Round podcast by JJ Zacharyson, and I just gotta know how you got here before going through, like, JJ's podcast. Like, what the frick? Like, go listen to the Late Round podcast. I wish I were you. You're in for a tweet? No, you're in for a treat. And yeah, he says it's better. He said it longer. He's one of the people that taught me that you don't handcuff your own running backs, you handcuff other people's running backs. That's an unintuitive thought for someone, especially if you just lost J.K. Dobbins, because what do you do now? At least you'd have some level of replacement production if you had Gus Edwards. Why wouldn't you draft your own handcuff? The thing that got that for me in my head, why that unintuitive thought suddenly made sense, was honestly the way JJ explained it, and then running, like I always do, running through the information he put out myself, because that helps me. One way I've come to describe it once I got to the end of the research was simple game theory, and I don't do a lot of game theory here or elsewhere because it's hard and I'm not that smart, but I did understand eventually if you just list out the number of options, draft your running back, draft someone else's running back handcuff, and the number of ways it could happen, there are simply more positive outcomes if you draft someone else's running back. That made sense to me once I finally listed it out. If it doesn't for you, think of it this way. If you draft your own running back handcuff, the reason that you would do that for, not the positive outcome, but the reason you would do it for, is a negative outcome. You go from J.K. Dobbins to Gus Edwards, and Gus Edwards is not replacement J.K. Dobbins. He's just not. We don't have the same hopes or the same ceiling for Gus Edwards, so the reason you would do it is a negative outcome. Your team gets worse if it happens. On the other hand, in every other positive situation, if you draft your own handcuff, i.e. the running back doesn't get injured, someone else is running back injured, or no running backs get injured, they are positive for your team, or at least they're not a negative for your team, but there are also positive outcomes for anyone who drafts someone else's handcuff. Whereas in the event you draft someone else's handcuff, that can be a positive outcome for you. If you draft Gus Edwards and Ezekiel Elliott, then your team improves when J.K. Dobbins gets injured. So in that instance, when J.K. Dobbins gets injured and you draft Gus Edwards, you draft your own handcuff, that's a negative for your team, and it's a positive for the team that drafted someone else's handcuff. So again, that might not be what does it for you. I advise just listing out the possibilities and seeing which are positive and which are negative, and that's what did it for me. And also thinking about it in terms of J.J. Zager recently laid out for, which are there's just more upside in drafting someone else's handcuff. It increases the number of ways your teams can get better between now and week one, between now and week two, between now and week three, whenever. And therefore, it is an upside play, and we should always, in general, be searching for upside plays. Not the 99th percentile upside play, because that puts you on too razor sharp of an edge and you can fall off, and you're either terrible or great. And when you're just playing against 11 other people, you really don't need that 99th percentile play. But with a later pick from round, say, 8, but from round 10 to the end of your draft, drafting someone else's handcuff is a very small edge. Now, the reason I'm pointing that part out is because it is an upside play, but it's a really small one. Like, it's certain. It's not like it won't be true if it happens to you. No, there are just more ways in which drafting someone else's handcuff is going to be a positive for your team than drafting your own handcuff could possibly be a positive for your team. At best, it's a less of a negative in one category, and that's not enough to really save your team. If one of your high running back picks goes down, you're looking rough. Even if you've got their backup, you're already at a disadvantage. It is not positive. So it's a very small edge, though, and the reason I'm pointing that part out is because all of that is true. It is now true. It won't be not true later. Like, you can count the possibilities now, and they'll be the same number before, during, and after, and therefore, like, it is true that the best decision is to draft someone else's running back handcuff, but how much does it matter? Not a lot. I mean, I would say there are very few things that we can say for sure are better decisions to make. Most of it comes down to an opinion at a certain point, a player evaluation you can be better or worse at, you can get right or wrong. You invent your own story to go the last 5 or the last 10%, where, you know, you finally make your decision, which might be different than someone else's decision, but you get it right or wrong, and there's a little leeway in there. Where there's variance, there's no certainty to which is the best or worst draft pick, or the best or worst running back to draft, or the best or worst rookie wide receiver to roster. We've got things that help make the guesses better or worse, but really at the end of the day, there's a significant percentage of it which is just not variance so much as you are going to have to make a call and you can get it right or wrong. There's very few things that are just black and white, this is better. Even if it goes wrong because you don't draft your own handcuff and you have J.K. Dobbins, you still made the right choice. There's very few things with that level of certainty in that it is an edge. So I would say that, like, don't throw away an edge for nothing, because there's very, very few of them that are definitely better. Most of them are kind of better if you do good at it, or if you listen to good advice, or if you just happen to be lucky and draft James Robinson, for example. So I wouldn't throw it away for nothing, but how big of an edge? Well, not really. I mean, think of most leagues that most people are playing in. Most backup running backs are going to be on the potential cut candidate list week one when waivers run. We're all going to be trying to add people every waiver cycle, especially for the first 8 weeks, because we're going to get a lot wrong, we're not going to see a lot coming because it's the NFL. And so week one, they're going to be players you want to add to your roster, and those backup handcuff running backs that we're stocking the back of our bench with, they're going to be prime cut candidates, unless you had an injured player that you drafted, or unless you made the mistake of drafting an extra kicker or an extra defense, or in fact a tight end at all. Then most of the players you draft in that later high, they're going to be the cuts. So unless you get lucky between when you draft and when the season starts, or unlucky, because since we're talking about players' injuries, then they're probably going to be cut anyway, so drafting someone else's running back is only so useful. And even if everything hits right and wrong for the appropriate teams, the edge in having someone else's running back is good. Like, your team is improved by having Gus Edwards now as part of your depth, but he's still not a starter, because he's a usable weeks guy, not an upside ceiling weeks guy. Like, he's not a J.K. Dobbins replacement. And what that led me to thinking about, I even made notes for this episode just in case, because there's something that I want to make sure I get through. I didn't write this note down. Those usable weeks are more or less valuable to some teams. For example, if you drafted Ezekiel Elliott and you now have Gus Edwards, your team is slightly better, but it's a very marginal edge. But if you went more wide receiver, tight end, quarterback, if it's super flex early, having Gus Edwards now is a bigger boon, right? And this got me to thinking about, you know, that running back handcuff debate took off like crazy, and it's not that important, and it's pretty well known. We can disagree on it if you like, but, I mean, the way to prove it is pretty well established by J.J. Zacharyson. I mean, you can game theory out. It can be fun. Not that everyone had fun in that conversation, but it can be a fun conversation, but it's not a huge edge. And it's not new. Something that occurred to me while reading through it, and occasionally chipping in, was ADP is very strategy or team dependent, right? Like, if you have Gus Edwards, like I just said, and you're wide receiver heavy early, that's a big change in your ability to replicate a base level number of running back points while you try to dominate a wide receiver until you get a better running back hit, hopefully somewhere later. At the same time, if you're more wide receiver heavy early in a particular league, in a particular draft, not in general, but in that draft, that's, you had a later first round pick, that's the way you went, then those weren't the running backs you were searching for necessarily, because you are seeking big upside. That's the dead zone running back. That's why I've been saying for years, don't draft running top 24 running backs. Stop increasing top 24 running back ADP if that's their ceiling. Now, I think there are a few running backs that fall into that range every year. Like, this year it's Myles Gaskin, Kareem Hunt, James Robinson, pretty easy, that have more upside than that top 24 dead zone running back phrase kind of encapsulates. And so I've been willing to draft him. But was I looking for Gus Edwards in that range if I was wide receiver heavy? No, I don't want usable weeks. I'm seeking those top 12 upside weeks. At the same time, I am more likely to be drafting backup running backs earlier than someone who drafted J.K. Dobbins earlier, because I do need usable weeks while I seek my top 12 upside at running back, right? And so Gus Edwards was actually being drafted outside that range in like round 12. I think he's up to round 9 in redraft. Still fairly similar range. And that team that was more wide receiver heavy is more likely to have been placing value on those upside weeks. But still, in either instance, if you are a heavy running back early, a heavy wide receiver early, or tight end or whatever else, then those usable weeks have a different level of value to you. In some instance, the only other team that Gus Edwards production, that juicy, juicy, maybe top 24 upside production, would have is for the J.K. Dobbins team and a pure zero RB team. Like, that's the only team that can see a big change in their sustainable or expectable weekly output to start the season, because they started out with virtually zero running back, hopefully, production, and now they've at least got a few usable weeks, like 8 weeks where he's going to be a top 24 running back at least, and that 0-8 is good. And potentially 0 with a loss of J.K. Dobbins to 8 to Gus Edwards is also good. It's just that game theory kind of works you out of it unless you just did it anyway, which is also fine. You've got to hit on your other picks anyway. Hopefully you drafted Trey Sermon somewhere or Michael Carter somewhere. I mean, the ultimate answer to this is a problem with running back injuries. So the answer is a more 0 RB heavy draft. That's the counter to running back injuries. And I get that a lot of people don't like zero running back, but I think it's because they're mad at the reasoning that explains the outcome. And it doesn't matter how angry you get at the apple for falling to the ground, gravity still exists, right? So it doesn't matter how angry you are at the phrase zero RB or more zero RB or modified zero RB or hero RB or whatever you want to goddamn call it. It's still true that running backs get injured at a higher rate, that wide receivers drafted early have a higher best ball win rate, teams that draft wide receivers heavily in the first few rounds, and zero RB and theories of that ilk are just trying to explain why. So it doesn't matter how angry you get at the apple, gravity still exists. And I think that's part of why, like, handcuff RB and running back backfield, these bad strategies are not borne out by the data, or the history, or the number of times. It doesn't win you more leagues more often if we play it out 10 different ways in the past. But it's fine. We're talking about marginal edges with that handcuff. Like, it doesn't lose you the league either, in most cases. But I think largely they're born of being raging at the reasoning so hard without understanding you can completely dismantle the reasoning, even though no one has, and the results are still the same. Running backs get hurt at a higher rate. Wide receivers drafted early win more in best balls. I mean, those are the facts we're trying to explain with this reasoning. Those facts are still the facts. Does that mean that you're in a best ball and you should always draft zero running back? No. I mean, that's also what the reasoning suggests, that this only works sometimes. It only works in the right situation. It's draft dependent. Everything we've ever talked about it by on this episode and JJ's on everyone's podcast, I mean, it can work. It's a viable strategy. It is not the only one. You have to be adaptable to the year, to the situation. Jacob Rickroad special. I mean, every year is different. Adapt to what the year looks like, which brings me back to ADP being team dependent. What's going on this year is young sophomore and rookie running backs are going down heavily. They're where most of the running back injuries are occurring. Wide receivers has mostly escaped it. Rashad Bateman had a scare, but it looks like he'll be back in 6 to 8 weeks. I still think he can achieve a good rookie season, but we're not hoping for too much, especially on Baltimore. But largely, wide receivers, unlike last year when Devontae Adams and Julio Jones went down and others, it was kind of a one-to-one last year. Running backs and wide receivers got hurt at a similar rate, unusually. But again, it was great. You can't replace those wide receivers with later drafted picks the same way you can get usable at least weeks from later running backs when running backs get hurt. That's also kind of part of the myth of wide receivers being replaceable or deeper. It's like, not really, not in the same way. You don't lose J.K. Dobbins and get Gus Edwards kind of replaceable. You don't lose Julio Jones and get Calvin Ridley. Calvin Ridley was playing at a top 12 level and scoring at a top 12 level with Julio Jones on the field. Like, that was my whole argument for him this year as wide receiver one. It's not like Julio Jones went down and Calvin Ridley ascended in the same way Gus Edwards will now get more work and now be potentially much more likely to be in the top 24. Wide receiver just doesn't work that way. A wide receiver goes down and there's just suddenly no good wide receivers very often, you know? OBJ leaves and suddenly the best you've got is Sterling Shepard, and he's fine, but he's definitely not even good at Gus Edwards level replacement, and he was also there the year before doing about the same thing. He didn't increase. In fact, the only one who increased was Evan Ingram that year, got more targets. Yay. I still like Evan Ingram. Everyone else hates him, so I doubt that was kind of the replacement production everyone was hoping for. It just works slightly differently. A lot of those extra usable weeks that happen at wide receiver are coming with more of a high variance and less predictable weeks. Like that 101 touchdown game from wide receiver who the fuck that no one sees coming. That's where all those extra top 24 weeks are coming from a lot of time. And that's just not capturable. You can't stream wide receiver the same way you can replace or predict who might have a usable week at running back. It's just not a thing. It's like the DeSean Jackson weeks, but they're not all coalesced into one DeSean Jackson. They're spread out throughout the NFL. Good luck guessing that player's name because you'll probably never heard it before. Like, that's not the same thing as backup running backs or handcuff running backs or running backs further down the depth chart having increased paths to opportunity through injury. It's just not. So zero RB, that's why that's the counterplay to running back injuries. Handcuffing running backs, even though it's fine, it's not league destroying if you handcuff your own running back, if you just feel better that way, especially when you're only against 11 other players, it's fine. Don't get it twisted. It's not league winning to not do it most of the time. Could be James Robinson, but rarely. And actually, plenty of people drafted Fournette, so forget even that. Anyway, where was I? I forget. It's not league winning. Zero RB is counter. Handcuffing your own running back actually doubles or, in fact, increases the problem of running back injuries because of the negative output or outcome because of the action you chose. Like, it's a negative outcome if you draft your own handcuff and you have to use it. So it actually worsens the problem of running back injuries rather than takes advantage of them like zero RB does or tries to. And like drafting someone else's handcuff attempts to. Drafting your own handcuff, in fact, leans into the idea the opposite way. It worsens the problem if running back injuries occur, and they're probably going to. So that brings me, I guess, to the Baltimore backfield, I guess, since I've talked about handcuffing for this long. Yeah, I don't think Gus Edwards is J.K. Dobbins' replacement. I think he's going to get the majority of the work in that backfield. I'm less excited about Justice Hill because we've seen years and years and years of them continually just finding other options rather than use Justice Hill. I do think he has more of the receiving upside and is therefore now somewhat of one of those worthy later running back dashes, but I'd be more inclined to listen to what the news is. I imagine they're going to add someone, a veteran, someone else. I still think Gus Edwards will take the lead there. I think actually the main effect is going to be Lamar Jackson. He's going to rush a little bit more. He's going to pass a little bit more, which is what I really want to happen in general in 2021 for the Ravens. So that's worth keeping an eye on too. Who they add is going to probably affect the story we tell there. Also, speaking of teams to break down, I've just had to do two projections updates. One of them was, for several reasons, but the Baltimore backfield, and the other one was Cam Newton being dropped by the New England Patriots. So I've updated those projections. Mac Jones is now like a top 20 quarterback, maybe potentially. Everyone's talking about vacated carries on Twitter, so I got to get back to that conversation and tell them why they're all wrong. In general, I think Damian Harris gets the lead role in terms of overall rushing percentage or opportunities, sure. I think Ramondre Stevenson has a much more tempting role, like going to have more touchdown efficiency and has come at a cheaper price this entire offseason. People are catching up because of preseason games, but he ended up on a lot of my dynasty rosters, hoping my breakdown of his profile helped you get him on a few rosters as well. I've actually increased passing for the team more generally because the opportunities just slide towards passing as a balance more without Cam Newton as your quarterback, which has increased the outcome for Jacoby Myers, who I think is wide receiver one there. So yeah, check those out, I guess, if you want. I updated and reposted the link on Patreon. You can also see on my Twitter timeline, I think I posted it there. But those broadly, I think, the effects of the recent players being dropped and injuries occurring. I did want to mention, like, unlike Cam Akers, I think J.K. Dobbins, the news is he's got an ACL injury, which means we can be more confident that he's going to be back. His ADP suggests no one's going to be forcing you to pay a premium because he was already being drafted below Cam Akers and everyone else, and he has a less, perhaps, presumably, maybe, don't know, not a doctor, injury. I think J.K. Dobbins makes an interesting case to buy if a team sucks or if you're thinking more about the future already. My value line kind of revolves in and around the first. I sell Gus Edwards for a first. I keep him for a second. I will also pay less than a first for Gus Edwards if I need those usable weeks. Same with Darrell Henderson. Same with Myles Gaskin and those top 24 running backs. I really do think ADP is team dependent. Like, Myles Gaskin is just a different proposition depending on what kind of team you have, you know, and it has more or less value to you. But anyway, I don't want to go back into that too much. So yeah, sell those running backs for a first, trade them or draft them for less than that value. In both Dynasty and Redraft, that's kind of the play. Put that on Patreon in more full words as well, just written out so everyone knows what I'm talking about. In terms of New England, I think this is why we try and catch things early. It's almost just too late to try and get Stevenson or Harris. Like, I wasn't in on Harris, although I kind of like the depth of Stevenson with almost no value in a rookie draft, a fourth-round, third-round rookie pick. And that I don't want to pay for running backs with more... I don't want to trade for running backs with more pass to opportunities open up. I want them to already be in my depth chart and then be looking to trade them away rather than keep them if I can get that first-line value or above. If you haven't, if they're not on your roster, there are still some options. Like, I'm noticing Kalen Hill making some noise in the Green Bay running back backfield. He's someone that we had fairly higher ranked. Actually, I had him above Trey Sermon in my pre-draft ranks. I still think he's not that expensive. For one of those younger, higher breakout potentials than he's currently being valued at, I think Kalen Hill is interesting. Jamar Jefferson in the Detroit backfield. Again, we're not talking... They could easily be cut candidates week one or by this time next year in Dynasty or whatever else. But again, we're trying to capture the ones with decent production profiles in interesting situations before this new kind of news breaks. And those are two that stick out to me still right now. And so if they're not on your roster or you just lost J.K. Dobbins, that would be one of the first things I'm looking at, or Cam Akers or anyone else. It's who is currently on the waiver wire, or might be more likely to be on the waiver wire, who could be one of these players who gets a larger path to opportunities than currently most people are expecting. So that would be my plan forward, outside of just hoping my other picks hurt, because J.K. Dobbins wasn't going to win or lose your league, even if he hit the top 12, which I didn't think he would, but that's not the time or place for that conversation. You still had to hit on your other picks, so you were hoping the running backs you took also did well, and the wide receivers, and they're going to be the core of your team this year. J.K. Dobbins is a loss, and you would move on to trying to draft some of those even deeper ones, even deeper players that may have hit the waiver wire or may still be undervalued on the back of benches elsewhere, instead of going and paying up for players who've already seen their value shift upwards because of unexpected and unpredictable news like an injury like J.K. Dobbins. That's, in general, where I'm moving on from here. All right. Yeah, again, one-sided conversation is not nearly as fun as it was when Jake was here, but hopefully, and I am enjoying the back and forth after they drop, and that's how I'm getting my conversation fixed. So let me know what you think. Post on a comment, I guess, on the YouTube video. I'll talk to you in the Patreon Discord if you're in there. Hopefully this turns out to be an extra episode. I think that'd be pretty cool since someone literally just mentioned maybe having one. And let me know what you think, for sure, definitely. Really appreciate it. 176 episodes in. I know it's not a whole number, so it doesn't seem like something worth celebrating, but it's a big number. For me, I didn't estimate how many we'd get through, but I would have imagined 176 being a pretty successful mark, and I'm pretty happy to be here, even if, you know, got a little lonelier while recording it, but the back and forth with everyone else about the crossroads, or on the crossroads afterwards, I guess, continues to be fun, and I really appreciate it. Yeah, that's it. I'll talk to you again later this week, it turns out. See you on the live stream later, and whoever's podcast I'm meant to be on today. Really appreciate it. Bye.
Yeah. Chicken or crow, chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the place, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got different lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, they got that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road. Go, clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.